June 17, 2020, it's the Watch for Pedro show. for Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday, Brother Matt. Love Grotto, 3 miles south of me, so we're still in Quentin Quarantino mode. And but I'm not man alone because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. Is it Lasiak?
Lakanak.
Okay. I'm glad I
there
asked.
There you go.
I'm glad I asked. People, it's Chris Lakanak in New Orleans. Great drummer, man, with his Junko beat. I want to thank Howard Wolfen for making the connect. And we started the show off with my Sean and Hour, John Coltrane, and then Junko beat with Afterburn. Chris, can I ask you your earliest musical recollection?
Oh, geez. That would be playing a little Magnavox plastic organ, you know, with the black and white push-button chords on the left with the tiny keys when I was probably about 3.
And where was this?
At home in New Orleans. We had one of those. That was our only musical instrument in the house. But I really gravitated towards it. And then, you know, became pots and pans. Once I experienced the Mardi Gras parade with the drum sections, that really launched my interest. To all the way to when I first saw my first band when we were on a camping trip with the family. I was probably about 10. And that was it, man. I had to have some drums. So
when you were playing that organ,
beginning.
When you were playing that organ, were you playing a percussive?
Well, no, not really. I was learning. I recall learning the Marine battle hymn for my dad because he was a World War II vet, and I guess that's my earliest recollection of what I was doing, you know. But, yeah, I've always had rhythms in my head. And that's the, you know, what that's like. It's never ending.
Sure, sure. It's kind of an affliction.
Yeah, a blessing or a curse.
I asked you about that percussive thing, because have you ever heard Daniel Johnson's old recordings?
I'm sorry, Daniel Johnson?
Johnston, yeah. No. He's a Texas guy. He passed away a little while ago, but I covered one of his songs called Walking the Cow, and this guy would play the organ like, bip, 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 bip. I mean, you could hear him banging on the keys louder than the sound of the organ. So that's why I asked that. What was the first record you bought? Chris, what was the first record you bought for yourself?
Oh, man, that would have been Grand Funk Railroad, the Red Album.
Everybody at Pedro had that. When I was in high school. I mean, I think it was the second album. Because the first one, I think they shortened their name for that one. But, like, everybody had that red record, I remember. Oh, man.
Yeah.
What a trip. So what about the school I got
to see him when I was about 12. We had the warehouse down here. It was an all-ages concert venue. So that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, there's I think half of a ZZ Top record is recorded there.
I wouldn't doubt it, yeah. The Allman Brothers played there.
I think Fandango.
Okay.
And I think I played there once, too. I think later on, it was a warehouse. It's a terrible sound, right?
Yeah, it was a warehouse. You bring a piece of carpet, they let you in for free.
Did you? What about at school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
You know, I left high school kind of early, and I went to studying theory and composition at a music's trade school here in New Orleans, Fricke School of Music. And I did that for about a year, and then I ended up in universities and LSU. I did the marching band there my freshman year and jazz bands at UNO and Loyola here in New Orleans.
Then
I went on to finish up my jazz studies at William Patterson under Rufus Reed and a lot of great musicians, jazz musicians out in New York were teaching there at that time.
But I was like thinking about earlier, like grade school and that shit.
Oh, grade school. Well, I remember like fourth grade, man, you know, we got to skip out of class and go to music lessons, and I was taking drums then. But the guy had us playing on metal chairs, and it was I didn't like it. So I quit.
Kind of like the pots and pans.
Yeah, only worse. I mean, you imagine hitting a metal folding chair with a stick. I mean, you know.
Well, I asked this kind of stuff, Chris, because a lot of schools got rid of their arts and music programs. So I'm just curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at that time, we had, you know, people would come in And, you know, they would, you know, you would leave your regular class and go to your music, lessons. And I did a little bit of choir too, as I recall, in grade school. Yeah. So.
What about after school with the basement band or the garage band, bedroom band, that with your buddies? Did you do stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely, man. We started that in junior high school.
Okay.
And we were playing all the Grant Funk songs. And
so you learned songs off records. Purple. That's what we did in the 70s. We copied songs off records. Yeah.
You'd have to drop the needle. You couldn't use your cursor. You had to drop the needle, you know.
Right. but like, there wasn't a real motivation for people to write their own songs back then. Like, where I grew up, like, no one wrote their own songs.
Yeah.
I first experienced that with the movement when I saw the punk bands up in Hollywood. They actually would try to write their own songs. We had none of that growing up, me and D. Boone.
Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, when I was 16, I was studying theory and composition. So I was writing then. And, you know, learn my harmony and stuff. But it was mostly piano-based, you know, instrument that I used. And we never really carried all much of that stuff over into a band. But I've always had the aspiration to have my own group and have had some form of a group all through my life. Many different names. And so, yeah, I've always tried to write.
That's interesting. But, you know, I remember, you know, Chico Hamilton.
Sure. Had some of his records.
Right. He was a big influence on the Minuteman drummer, George Hurley. And there was a big contract. He tried to get songwriting credit. The drummers can't write songs.
That's what they say, huh?
Yeah, is that bullshit or what? I mean, that's freaky. Okay, the notes don't last that long, but come on, music's music.
Yeah.
So that's a trick. But you were writing on the piano. Charlie Mingus used to write on piano, you know, even though he's a bass player. So I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So, being a drummer.
You know, I did the cover band thing as well. You know, I mean, here growing up in New Orleans, you know, I did tons of weddings and convention parties, and then it would have club gigs, and a lot of the club gigs were, you know, we'd play at that time, you know, funk music, Commodores, or, you know, the dirt music, as they call it, you know, funky stuff.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, and then, of course, all the traditional New Orleans music that, you know, I've heard growing up all my life, and just playing different gigs, you know, you learn all these things, learn all these tunes coming up. That's how we did it anyway, you know. I think if we would have had the technology today, I mean, when I was a kid, that we have today, I'd probably be super famous.
Yeah. Of course. I want to play March 1827 here, okay?
We'll be right back. Ah, the name is Bootsy, baby. And if you love music like I love music, then you can't live without this music. And music certainly wouldn't be here without our great musicians.
As people, we're not afraid of nothing. We stand toe to toe and fight, but this battle that we're facing, it's hard to know what's wrong or right. Hiding in the hugs of loved ones, friends and strangers that we meet. Separation is our shield now to keep us strong and on our feet.
Brothers and sisters,
control, just all you want, gets you out of the house. You might make new friends, stop being a dormouse. Be sure to wear a mask, carry a clean air sign. But where you're running to, they might keep you from dying. But will you protest for years and years? Protest for decades, centuries? Protest day and night, every waking hour. Protest years and years forevermore. Will you protest for years? You've nothing else to do. Your jobs are mostly gone, there ain't no more school. Helicopters overhead all day and night. It's the new soundtrack of apocalypse life. You can protest all you want till the cows come home, but what will really change in the extra long term? We need new laws like no more chokeholds. Protest day and night every waking hour. Police will shoot humans. Cops get killed too. The sheriff just got slaughtered in sleepy Santa Cruz. There's 600 million guns in America, take heed. More guns than people in the land of the free. Gun is just a tool waiting to be used. But tools get misused by people who are confused. People still get killed every single day. Will the daily death toll ever go away? People go hungry every single day, yet millions of tons of food gets thrown away. It's blamed on supply chains that had a big disruption. Tourism, hotels, restaurants look belly up when no one's got a job. Will rent forgiveness come? Will there be UBI at work in Finland soon? Will we protest for decades more? Will we protest forevermore? We wonder what's our future really going to be. Few tech jobs with lots of delivery. Bring back the WTA, plenty to do. Get paid for making art, make the world beautiful. Universal health care, forgive all student loans. They do this in Europe. Why not here at home? Will you protest till the end of time? Protest till everything is both yours and mine. Yours, everyone. Thank you.
I like your style.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
that was Junko Beat with March 1827. And then we had Bootsy Collins after that. He's got some brand new thing. It's a for a charity thing. Bootsy up in Cincinnati. He's not doing gigs anymore. I think he lost his hearing is problem. And then V Vale after that protest song 2020. Barry Berkel band out of Tel Aviv with Omen. Pat Ruthenspear from the Germs. Magic Candle, Tragic Canary. Quesalita, Braviac. Bilge Pump out of Leeds, England. Thank you very much. And finally, Just Love Me. Junko Beat. How long is Junko? Well, we're hearing some hatches open and close.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
So
we're secure.
We're secure. Right. We're safe. So tell me about Junko Beat. I mean, when did that come around?
Oh, we started with the Junko Partners in New York City when I lived there in the 90s. And it was with a guitarist from down here that we had a band. We played a lot of jazz gigs in New Orleans, and we ran into each other in New York. Anyway, we started playing New Orleans something music because we missed New Orleans, you know, living away. And we formed a band called Junko Partners, which was kind of after the song Junko Partner.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, a lot of people have recorded from Dr. John to,
sure.
to, you know, a lot of us. But James Booker, excuse me. You know, we were playing, Manny's Car Wash, I think, in New York. And the guy that booked us came back and he says, okay, you bunch of junkies, I want you to put on a good show. And, you know, the Junko Partner is referring to a junkie, if you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah.
So when I got to New Orleans and kind of reformed the band, I decided to put the connotation on the music and call it Junko Beat instead of Junko Partners.
Sure.
And then we became, it's primarily an original composition band. And which is difficult to do these days because most everyone wants to go and hear that familiar song played by, you know, a cover band. So we're, you know, of course there's always the original outlet too, but it's a lot harder to,
you know, what's
just
even
work
worse,
steady.
I think Chris is the tribute band.
Oh yeah. That's another big thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's like ridiculous. There's this part of New York City, I remember it was by Bleecker Bobs. That's all they played was bands being some other band.
Yeah. That's crazy. I was just in L.A., a few months back, and somebody took me to the Whiskey A Go-Go, and we heard a Guns N' Roses tribute band.
That used to be a great club, too, you know? Tons of poses, huh? That was a great club. That was the first club we played that had monitors.
Oh, yeah?
It was so a little while
ago. Wow, they come a long way, man.
But mm-hmm. I should have asked you, how'd you go from New Orleans to New York City? What led to that adventure?
I finished school up there in New Jersey, just outside of the city at William Patterson, and made a lot of great friends up there that are still, you know, my college buddies to today, and many of them have done very well for themselves in the music world, jazz studies. And I was always into jazz. Here in New Orleans, and I had eyes to go to New York, and the school was a way of getting an introduction to the city, which was, I think, a really great way to go because I made so many friends. And after graduating, I went on the road and came back to New Orleans and went back to New York and went through the whole thing where I went on a road gig and came home to no more apartment and no more stuff. We got robbed and friend didn't renew the lease. I came back home to New Orleans and had a panic attack about halfway back. You know, like I had to pull over and lay on the hood of the car like, God, I didn't, you know, whatever it is, the bottom line is you left. you left, you know, after the years. So. Oh, I got back to New Orleans and played in a band, started playing with a band called Tribe Nunzio. And that was a very popular band here in New Orleans. And we did a lot of stuff. You know, about, I don't know, a month after I left New York, we were back in New York playing at Tramps with Tribe Nunzio. And I was playing keyboards and percussion with this band. And next thing you know, I'm at Tramps playing Art Neville's Hammond organ.
Wow.
That was a crazy turn of events, you know. Some of my music friends from New York were there like, "What? How'd you end up here?"
Yeah, 20 seconds. But that was a good pad to play.
Yeah, yeah. And Tramps was a good club.
Yeah, yeah.
Too bad it's not there anymore.
Nope.
But, yeah, so anyway, I came back to New Orleans and played with them about 3 years, and we made a record, and personality started to boil, and I said, you know what, guys, I'm going to go to New York. I always wanted to. My girlfriend and I had broken up 6 months earlier, and I'm like, I'm out. So I made it up there and spent 10 good years. Started teaching at Drummers Collective in New York, and where you're going to hear some hinges again. I have to run it short on power. but that was a treat, being able to teach at the Drummers Collective, and I had published a book, Modern Approach to Second Line, New Orleans Second Line Drumming. Right before I moved up there, and we used that book at the collective. And it's still around. We sell it online and stuff. But, you know, it was one of the first of its kind, really.
Well, so, we're talking about that stuff. Yeah. Like, introduce the New York drummers to something that had been going on in New Orleans a long time, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, well, you know, that school was kind of international. They kind of survive and more in Japanese students. But we get a lot of Swiss and German students, you know, come to New York to study.
Right.
So, yeah, it was worldwide. And, you know, when I've done some tours over in Europe, I actually was able to contact some of the former students who went back home and started their own schools. And, you know, I've done some clinics and stuff for them, which was always fun.
You like teaching?
Yeah, I don't mind it. But it takes a lot out of you. And if you're trying to play a lot of gigs, it becomes, you know, too much, I guess. I mean, I've taught everyone, from adults to children, you know. One kid, I taught him how to read music, sight read music, before he learned how to read English.
Wow.
He was about four or five, you know. So, yeah, I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun, you know. It's almost like mentoring people, you know. More so when you're teaching kids than actual, you know, they're really going to do something with it, you know, which is, you know, always you get joy out of that. But I'd much prefer to just be on the road playing gigs, man. That's the life I love.
You like gigs better than teaching. Okay. That's kind of what I was asking. And because I can understand, you've given so much, and maybe they don't want to give back. They don't want to do their homework or study or shit.
Well, yeah, that's part of it sometimes. You know, you always have different levels of interest from your students. But
I guess the word is commitment.
Yeah, yeah. But I get more pleasure out of playing gigs. I mean, you know, when you're playing and you get in the zone, you know, whatever that is, that certain air that envelops you, that's why I keep doing it. It's God, you know, coming down through you as far as I'm concerned. And so I always like to practice on Sundays, kind of like going to church, you know.
Sure, sure. So when you came back to New Orleans, no more teaching?
No, I haven't in a while. You know, when I first came back from L.A., I did a little bit of teaching. I actually did a after-school program and taught a bunch of third graders how to play piano. And then I was teaching at a store. That's when I was teaching the little 4-year-old guy to read. And I had some good students there. And the store closed. And, you know, I just kind of went on and started playing more gigs. You know, before the shutdown, I was playing a lot of little gigs in New Orleans, you know, calling for the donut crowd, you know, the tourist gigs. That's probably playing about probably about 25 hours a week or something, you know, 30 hours a week behind the drums.
That's so, some good prep. Look, yeah. At the end of the first hour, June 17, 2020, Dish Watt Pedro Show, Lackadac?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Special guest, Chris Lackadac. Hold tight for hour two. June 17, 2020, it's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
Survive. Ooh, ooh. We need to heal from this.
Well, for Pedro's show, we start off the second hour with a Junko beat doing words. Then out of Tokyo Feud with Drone. Karam out of Canada with Showdown in Mohenjo-Daro. And finally, Nana, Junko beat. So what's the process, Chris, when you're composing? Like for Junko beat, like these couple songs we just heard.
I do compose a lot of tunes up from my drum grooves. Like I might, you know, record some drum parts and, you know, maybe put a little bass line down and things just start popping into my head. You know, one note leads to another and, you know, work on a little bit, come back the next day, turn it on, listen, another idea pops in your head and I've learned to put them down as fast as you can.
Right.
Before they go away.
Right. They're gone forever. Oh, man. Well, I asked because, you know, like people like Stevie Wonder and Prince and Dave Grohl, these guys who made one-man records, it seems they always started with the drums.
Yeah.
But
that's
then,
a good point. I'm glad you told me that.
But then
I wasn't aware.
Yeah, because the conventional way is like some guy on a piano or guitar, right? And then he hands everybody a demo.
Yeah.
I know for sure the bass guitar, unless it's a reggae song, it's getting added on last.
Yeah. And they do that with drums too sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I know.
You know, put a drum track on there for me, you know. So,
it's so crazy.
But I like to come from the drums up. It doesn't always happen that way. I'm playing a lot more piano nowadays. And so sometimes I'll come up with an idea. And, you know, I'm always thinking of grooves or something. So, and sometimes I'll go through, once I get the song down, I might go change the drum pattern or something. You know, try to find the best thing that really works in the song.
Right.
So sometimes it's laborious, I guess, you know. Sometimes it just flows right out. So it's just a matter of, I guess, you know, paying attention to developing your songs.
I just think, you know, as a composition tool, why not drums?
Yeah.
I mean, it's rhythm music, right?
Yeah. It's the backbone. I mean, you know, whenever you go in the studio, I'm sure you know this as well, you know, you're trying to cut live tracks with a band or trio or whatever, you know, the rhythm section.
Yeah.
People can make mistakes, but it's all about the drums, you know, on that tape. They can fix the, you know, redo that bass part or whatever, but the drums is, you know, that's the track you want to make sure is right before you start building on anything.
Absolutely. Yeah, adding a blast is like insane. What's your take on click track?
Turn it on and stay with it, I guess. I do use click tracks when I record, not always. The song Words we just heard, that wasn't done with a click track, you know.
Okay.
That was cut live. You know, some of the tunes on the record were cut live. And some of them were tracked, as you might notice.
Well, what about, have you ever had the bird, I want to say burden here, because to me it is a burden, playing gigs with click tracks?
Oh, it's interesting, because actually with Junko Beat, I started using samplers.
Right.
And creating loops. And I play along with loops. And I just got one of those, the new Roland sample pad. So a lot of tunes that we do are, you could call it a click track. It's not a click track. It's a loop that I created in the studio. And the great thing about that is that I can trigger parts that I've recorded, like say if there's a cello melody coming up, I can trigger that as well to back up the live player and have the sound just, you know, be huge. So it's interesting to work with that. You have to be careful, though. You have to stay with it.
Sure. What about this stuff? What about this tune, Lotus Rising?
Lotus, yeah, that was cut live without a click.
Okay.
And it's just basically, you know, it's kind of Indian mantra.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. And Dave Easley played pedal steel on that. It's a great pedal steel player and great musician. He had some kind of different kind of slide that made it sound more like a sitar, which was interesting.
Incredible instrument. Like 10 strings and like 8 pedals. I mean, they're not like a lap steel. They're incredible. They're almost their own orchestra.
Right. No, this is a real pedal steel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lap steel.
Okay, let's listen.
He's great.
Stuff on here is probably intended to be produced or whatever, other instruments, etc. This is a song about dissatisfaction on two levels, I guess. It's about a person who's dissatisfied with the way they live in a station in life and want to return to the class from which they came, and it's taken from the point of view of a person who is scorning that in some sense. It's called The Next Room of the Dream. Come on, but not a lot to me. I got eyes and I can't see. At the party, hide and seek in the moonlight, dancing cheek to cheek. Called a mess, two stains running all down your dress. You learn to smile, oh so sweet, out where they cut the long tall meat. I'm in some stranger's bed. You took off your ring before you got too far, and you left it in the glove compartment of your car. Can marry into low money, you can be just like your daddy. you have seen, you can't describe to me this dream. I can sip or I can guzzle, but I cannot do this puzzle. Show me the way to the next room, I'll be. Show me the way to the next room, I'll be screaming. Show me the way to the next room, I'll be. Show me the way to the next room, I'll be. Show me the way to the next room, I'll be screaming. Next room of this, show me the way to the next room of this, show me the way to the next room of this dream. Show me the way to the next room of this, show me the way to the next room of this, show me the way to the next room of this.
Art for Pedro show. It's got a lot of Art Deco, too, you know, a roundy kind of thing. But it's got this Lotus motif all over the place, in the windows, the handrails. People were talking about this WPA post office we got here in Pedro. It's also got a worker mural in it. It's pretty amazing. And there's this one painting. It's got like a sundial where you can read the time. It's got all these angles on this rock. And it says, well, you can read the time all over the world with this sundial. Well, you know, with the painting, you can do anything. Wow. Right? People, that we just heard Joko B doing Lotus Rise, and then Vem with the Estelar, brand new out of Catalonia. Peter Lochner, Cleveland, the room, the next room of the dream. Tripod Jimmy, after that, Shake Your Chains, Glimpse Trio, Light from Outside Part 2. Calvin Newborn. Nah, I don't think he was with them then. When he was with these guys, they were called Monster Cock Rally. And I remember at the gig we were doing with him, he was going, what kind of fucking name is that? Yeah, I don't know. And then we heard Oil Man. Tell me about Oil Man.
Oh, Oil Man, that's off our first record. And it's an interesting groove there. It's kind of an ostinato bass line groove. That's one tune we do with it, play along with the sampler. And it's kind of, I guess, reflective of, you know, the Middle East. You know, the melody kind of refers that. And it's just, I was going through some stuff with some, there's a song on that record also called Chemical Report.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got inundated with the chemicals from a oil refinery close to where I grew up. And around that time, I was writing and just the whole petrochemical thing and all. So I don't know. I just thought that fit.
No, right. There's some areas in Louisiana that are kind of cancer because of this stuff, right?
Oh, it's crazy down here, man. Yeah. Yeah, I'm fortunate. I'm living out in the woods now, away from all that stuff. But it was pretty bad for a minute there. You know, they kept having chemical releases like every other week, and of course they weren't notifying the public.
Of course. So with the sampler, when you play this live, you got a little unit you bring with your drum set.
The sampler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I set it up on my set, and you know, I run a couple of alternative pads, and then they have
The trigger is like a pad, right? You just hit with your
triggers.
Okay.
Yeah, the pads are, you know, little disc, little electronic disc, like a electronic kit, and then they also it does triggers off your acoustic drums, so I can trigger sounds. And it's just a pretty amazing little thing, man. Something I've tried to do in the past.
Yeah.
With, you know, using four different components or whatever to try to accomplish this feat of getting the drums to, you know, add extra sounds to the drum hits.
Yeah.
And then Roland came out with this thing, you know, all in one, does everything. Thank you. So I've been having fun with that.
What's the name of the device?
Oh, it's I think it's called the SPX 90 or something. No, that's
an old delay, right? An old delay.
I'd have to, right.
Yamaha SPX 90s. I remember when they came out. If you want to think about new wave Duran 80 sound, that's SPX 90.
SPX 90.
You know that snare drum? That gated snare, like pow, pow.
Yeah. That's it. Okay. I was with a band years ago touring in British Columbia, and we got stopped on side of the road from construction. We're all waiting there. We were in the middle of nowhere, way up in the mountains. And this guy in front of us comes walking back, and he says, oh, y'all in a band? And we're like, well, yeah. He says, you heard about the new SPX 90? We're like, what?
Oh, man. We're at the end of the second hour, June 17, 2020. Special guest Chris Lackadak, hold tight for hour three. June 17, 2020. It's the third hour of the Juan from Pedro show.
as the sun falls. Here comes the edge of sight and its dark walls. Sunset creeps towards the night and the darkness can now remain. The stars are bright as ink that bleeds a stain. The light is but a ghost on this winter's day. The wonder sleep and the promises we keep while away before dawn, a new beginning. When night slid begins to slide open once more with a hopeful surprise.
Dreams can just shatter. your secrets in my heart. Share your treasure in the evening, not burying the sun.
I know we both feel this way. There's something
about XBX 90s? Okay. Started off the third hour with Junko Beat doing Control. And then Crane and Skip with Eve, Living More, Strange Hopefuls, Linus Aquarius, Niberian Sun, Dream Phases, Confusion, Babby with Bells from Paul Jacobs, and finally, Let Me Hear You Sing from Junko Beat. Right now, what do you got going?
Right now, I've been trying to, you know, do the legwork for my record coming out, and we were planning to start to play out live again before the shutdown.
Yeah.
But now during the shutdown, man, I'm, you know, just kind of hanging tight and, you know, working on trying to keep my chops up and writing some new stuff.
Can you record?
Yes, I have actually someone that came to my rescue, you know, after the flood in New Orleans. It took me about 10 years before I even thought about having kind of a normal life, you know. And anyway, I moved into this place out here in the woods. This woman took me in. I rented a room from her, and it's a big A-frame cabin with 22-foot ceilings.
Whoa.
And there's a loft. And I have my studio set up in the loft now, man. It's great. We recorded some of the songs here. She's very accommodating to the arts. So I owe a debt of gratitude to this lady, Helen, for, you know, helping me get back on my feet.
Sure, thank you. Thank you,
Helen. A little rough there for a while.
Yeah, you know, I was reading this thing about Shakespeare, whoever wrote that fucking shit. King Lear was written during a lockdown.
Really?
You know, they had plague and shit like that, you know, 400 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize that. That was Shakespeare. As a matter of fact, I wrote a paper on King Lear when I was in college.
Okay.
So
that was written
for me. Don't give up your power.
That's right. The daughters, right? You don't love me enough.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they just bought him.
There's some trippy shit in that one. But my point was, like, even though it was a hell, you know, no gigs and shit. Well, I guess they were no plays, no theater, but still was productive because that play's timeless, right?
I'm sorry, say again?
The play's timeless. It came out of a hell situation, but he got something productive out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. I hope a lot of people that are in my situation do the same, you know. It's getting a little tough, you know, the isolation. It's kind of starting to wear on my brain a little bit, but, you know.
What about trading files? What about trading files, Chris? You do that?
No, I haven't really done a whole lot of that since the shutdown. No, and the whole, you know, live broadcast thing.
Stream?
The streaming or whatever. I don't know. I haven't been inclined to do that. I was thinking about calling the band and trying to maybe get them over here and shoot some video or something like that. But I'm just kind of waiting, like most people, you know, holding back to see how this thing goes.
Yeah. I want to play Voyage to Golden Green.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. not so faint heroes, ghost of a voluminous past, spirits weeping and billowing, full sheets spread to the wind, charting out the course of history, recording it for all things past, spreading the sheets of history to be filled with the winds of inspiration. That is what we are go forward to believe in. All of those lost souls telling forward the pages of history, lest we forget that what went on before. Oh, long legends and mysterious things, the wings of history beat around my brain, reminding me of those we lost. They fought bravely for our freedom. Single out the man and praise him, the soldier who died in battle. Those ghosts gave all they had, filling up our heavy history, fleshing it out and making it real, something to praise for every man. Yes, the mighty winds of history were manned by these great men.
Affection Soundscape Sonata. I was telling John Cage why I oughta. Yeah, the cocktail party was a Savage Affection Soundscape Sonata. Telling John Cage why I oughta, as he sized up the punch bowl and gave me a hickey. I thought about what the hell. What the hell to think? And when that presto moment clocked in with forbidden delight, I shotgunned 433 in drunk conductor silence. And then I tipped over my drink. Ghost of Hattie Carroll was brought in to deal with the whole pretentious mess. We stopped listening to nothing and took a wild guess. Yeah, I took it for a stroll up the Statue of Liberty's dress, then jerked off to the Promised Lands, Lose Your Marbles, STRESS. Yeah, we jerked off to the Promised Lands, patented Lose Your Marbles, STRESS. And we all know what that spells. cocktail party was a savage affection soundscapes sonata. I was telling John Cage why I oughta. As he sized up the punch bowl and gave me a hickey, I thought about what the hell to think. And when that presto moment clocked in with forbidden delight, I shotgunned 433 in drunk conductor silence and tipped over, tipped over my D-R-I-N-K drink. To deal with the whole pretentious mess, we stopped listening to nothing and took a wild guess. Yeah, I took it for a stroll up the Statue of Liberty's dress. And jerked off to the promised lands, lose your marbles, S-T-R-E-S-S, 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 S-T-R-E-S-S. E-S-S.
Girl Heart, H-A-R-T, and these girls together are just unbelievable with their vocal blending. So she's doing that now.
And what's her name? And, what's her name again, Chris?
Tree Swindle.
Tree Swindle.
T-R-E-A.
Okay.
Yeah. Triana, or we call her Tree for short.
Okay.
And, but she was a kind of person that, you know, she used to read the dictionary when she was a kid, but she wrote the poem for Voice of Golden Green, which really kind of launched the second side of the record, which is trying to, you know, it's like get on the ship, take the voyage to the land of, you know, Lotus Rising, the new beginning, and we get to the land of milk and honey, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, so that was the whole concept of the side B. Side A is, you know, with the song Control,
sure.
If you play that. That's my friend Jane Brody, who is a long-lost friend from my days in New York City. We reconnected, and she came down to visit and worked on some of her music, and she sang on Control and Words, and I really liked what she did on that, and she knocked the other singers off the map there.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, simply go to junkobeat.com,
okay.
JUNKOBEAT.com.
Right.
And, yeah, there's a sample, I think, of the song Control on there, which is going to be released on the streaming outlets soon. But the rest of the record right now, you're going to have to go to the Drum Parade record site to purchase the vinyl,
uh-huh.
CD, or download the tracks. And you can get there through the Junko Beat site. There's a connection there. Or you can go straight to drumparaderecords.com.
Okay, that's great. I mean, incredible journey of music. You met some young drummers. What kind of advice would you give them seeing your journey, what you've been through?
Be cool.
That's right.
Personality has a lot to do with
absolutely.
It. How you hang out with people.
Absolutely.
If you want to go on the road, you're going to be living with people.
Yep.
You know, you got to be conscientious of others and practice. Do your routines. Yeah, I mean, you know, I coming up practicing this, practicing that. It wasn't until I moved to New York City when I started studying with a guy named Sam Ulano, who started me out reading books. Anyway, his whole thing was repeat the same thing every day and then add to it. So actually with that guy, I was working out about a dozen drum books, and every day when I'd sit down to practice, I'd start with the first page for the first lesson, and the second lesson was the second page, but you play the first page and the second page out of each book.
Yeah.
And as I went on for months and months of studying with him, man, I'm reading like, you know, 15, 20 pages out of every book. 12 books, so I don't know how many pages of rhythms those are, but, you know, it really developed my reading, and it's the routine that, you know, that really helps you develop, I think, rather than just, you know, oh, I'll practice this one day and practice that another day. And
I love the way you say
anyway.
Practice. You don't say rehearse. You say practice. I like
yeah,
that.
Practice.
I like that because...
Okay.
Yeah, because this rehearse, it sounds like some actor or something.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess I use practice because, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're trying to work out the physical aspects of playing to develop enough physical ability so that your mental capacity takes over and you don't even know what your body's not even really, you know, knowing what it's doing in a sense. And then hopefully from there you get to the spiritual level, which is you just sit back and watch. You know?
I know.
And yeah.
I know
and,
exactly what you mean.
So,
I'm way into that.
I bet.
Way into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do gigs and I'm like, how did I do that? I ask myself that question all the time. Man. Like, how did that come out? I don't know how that happened.
Chris, you know, it's been a big honor to have you on the show. When you after this guy, we get through this lockdown and all this, and you get another thing going, will you come back on the show and we'll play the new record and talk about it?
I would love to, Mike. Okay. Yeah,
means
of course.
It means a lot to me.
It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, man.
You too, brother.
Very much.
Okay, people. It's been June 17, 2020 edition of Wap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.